You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is brought to you by Stella Artois. When you're planning to enjoy everything Houston has to offer, especially all the great restaurants in our city, start with Estella. Whether you're going to eat with friends or solo, start with Estella. Stella Artois. Enjoy responsibly. Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. This is the Thursday show where I have a conversation with someone in the restaurant world that I think you will want to hear from. He is a co-founder of Free Range Concepts, the hospitality group behind The General Public, Bowl and Barrel, and The Rustic. Kyle Noonan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Eric, I'm doing well. Good to hear from you.
Kyle, thanks so much for doing this. I always like to kind of start these interviews at the beginning. So tell me a little bit about kind of the roots of your career. How did you get involved in the hospitality business?
Sure. I tell this story quite often, much to the chagrin of my wife. I got in it for girls. I was in college at SMU in Dallas, and I needed some date money and some beer money, some walking around money. And I initially asked my dad, and he was like, yeah, you can go get a job, son. And so I went and applied to be a server at Papado's Seafood Kitchen, which is ironically a Houston-based company. Got a job waiting tables there, did it for a few months, and they asked me to go into management. And I said, well, yeah, sure, why not? Give it a shot. And I never left the industry. I was with the Pappas organization, which is an outstanding organization, and everyone in Houston obviously knows the brands very well. But I was with them for 13 years, oversaw the Papado and Papacitos brands. And finally, about, I guess it was about 11 years ago, decided to leave and start my own company. And I've only applied as an adult to one job in my life. Because right, I went from Pappas to my own company.
So tell me about kind of starting Free Range Concepts. How did you kind of develop the idea? I mean, I know you have a business partner. How did you kind of develop the idea of what Free Range Concepts was going to be in the beginning?
Sure. Yeah, great question. Well, so my business partner was my college roommate. We've been best friends since we were 18 years old. He was the best man in my wedding, I was the best man in his wedding. He actually officiated my wedding. Okay. He's my kid's godfather and vice versa. So we're, needless to say, we're close. And most people would say you probably shouldn't go into business with your best friend, but for us, it's worked swimmingly. In a large part due to the fact that our skill sets are very different. We're very left brain, right brain. I was an art major in college, painting and sculpting major. He was a business major. After college, I went into the restaurant industry, like we talked about, and he went to work on Wall Street. So we have very different skill sets. And what he does, I have no desire to do, and vice versa. He wants no business in what I do. So it works very well, and we trust each other implicitly. Our values are the same. And so we always talked about getting together and doing something. Once we really kind of cut our teeth out on our own, we knew it was, we wanted to, this is kind of before the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hour rule, sure, before right. That book was written. We knew we had to go and be be focused on our craft, and learn from the best, for years, you know, somewhere between 8 to 12 years. It ended up being about 13 for us. And we just wanted to go do that and eventually get together. And so it was in, I guess it would have been 2011. He called me up one day and said, "Hey, you want to go bowling?" And I said, "Sure. Where do we go bowling at? I actually haven't been bowling in a long time." And he goes, "That's a great question." So we started researching and we said, maybe this is that opportunity. Maybe this is our chance to start something together. So we started researching. We both left our respective careers and spent a year in my home office writing a business plan. And the business plan, the thesis was pretty simple. It was based off this idea that everybody's Miller Lite tastes the same. You know, it really comes down to the experience or the environment in which you are drinking that Miller Lite is the differentiator. And so we wanted to do unique experiences while dining, you know, approach things from a restaurateur standpoint, but have a unique offering and a unique experience. So our first concept was Bowl and Barrel, which we opened in 2012. And 6 months later, we opened a concept called Mutt's Canine Cantina, which is a restaurant bar that overlooks a private membership-based dog park. So we had bowling, which was a restaurant bar with bowling. And very, very important to differentiate that. Bowl and Barrel is a restaurant and bar with bowling as opposed to a bowling alley that serves food. And that's a much different approach than the typical bowling alley with, you know, sticky floors and gooey nacho cheese.
Right. Or even these kind of more modern, like fancy bowling alleys that have like cocktails and stuff, right? Like they're
that's right. That are still pretty bad on the food and beverage component. They try to be fancy, but it's just not very good typically.
Right.
And I hate to disparage anybody specifically, so I'm just going to just cast that as a blanket statement.
I'm not going to ask you to name names. Don't worry.
Yeah. So we opened Bowl and Barrel. 6 months later, we opened Mutt's Canine Cantina. And then 3 months after that, we opened The Rustic, which is a restaurant and bar that has a live music component. Our original one in Dallas holds about 3,000 people for concerts. So again, we wanted to approach it from a restaurateur standpoint, approach the concert venue. Versus having a concert venue that just serves food. And so that was a crazy 9 month period, as you can imagine. It was not the way we drew it up. We didn't anticipate opening three large scale, unique, concepts within a 9 month period, but that's just the way the timing of all the projects laid out. And we just basically just had to grip the handlebars and go down the hill and hope not to crash. And fortunately, we made it out in one piece.
Yeah, I mean, you've grown pretty substantially then, but I want to talk about your Houston operations, but talk to me about The Rustic, because it is such a special place. It's such a grand scale. And of course, you're partnered with Pat Green. And, you know, if you're like me and you went to college in the 90s, I mean, you know who Pat Green is.
Sure.
You know all the words to the songs. You've seen him in concert a bunch. Tell me about how you kind of built that relationship with Pat and how that came about.
You know, Eric, the world is a funny place. It's weird how when you're growing up, you see these people that maybe you look up to or you admire or you're a fan of. And it's funny how you just kind of end up sometimes crossing paths with these people later in life as an adult and becoming friends. And that's what happened with Pat and I. We had a mutual friend and we had a weekend in Vegas together. And and from what we can remember of that weekend, we had a great time and hit it off and just were thick as thieves ever since.
Yeah. So how did you kind of approach him or were like, "Hey, I want to open a concert hall and I want you to be a part of it"?
Yeah. So it was actually my business partner's bachelor party out in the Texas Hill Country. We were at a ranch, just a bunch of guys grilling steaks out over an open flame, listening to music out under the stars. And Pat was there, Josh was there, my partner Josh, and we just kind of said, this is the type of feel that we should bottle up and create a concept around. We felt like everybody has this connection, whether you're a city boy or a country boy, everybody kind of has a connection of a campfire, fireplace. There's some bit of nostalgia there. Grilling outside, cold drinks, out under the stars, great music. And that was how the concept was born. We started the ideation process then, and I think we got pretty close to where we wanted to be. It certainly was a lot busier than we expected it to be, but which is a great problem to have. But it turned out, from a concept standpoint, pretty close to where we started.
Yeah, I mean, as I recall from around the time the first one opened in Houston, it's the Dallas location is one of the highest grossing bars by liquor sales in the state of Texas. Do I remember that right?
Yeah. No, you do. You do. In fact, when our first year of opening, the only venues in Texas that had more volume than us were the stadiums, like, you know, where the Texans play or the Rockets play or the Cowboys play. And, you know, so stadiums were the only venues that had higher sales than us in terms of liquor sales. So it was crazy. I'm not going to lie. We would have never set out to anticipate something that busy and that much of a whirlwind, but it was a hurricane. But unfortunately, we were able to hold on.
So let's talk about kind of your Houston operations. I mean, as you said, you've got Bowl and Barrel here. You've also got the General Public, which is a concept you haven't talked about. So
that's right.
So maybe just sort of describe kind of how that fits into the portfolio and how you developed that.
Yeah. So that was a fun concept to come up with. It's an American gastro pub. The bar is very whiskey focused. And it came about because at our original Bowl and Barrel in Dallas, there was a really, really lousy bar next to kind of gastropub bar restaurant next to Bowl and Barrel that was always busy and it was terrible. And I got to know the owner. It's now since closed. But I got to know the owner and I asked him, I said, so where's your business coming from? And he said, honestly, Kyle, 80% of our business comes from you, from Bowl and Barrel. People, you're on a 2-3 hour wait at night. People come, put their name on the list with you, then walk next door and have drinks or have dinner or whatever it might be. And so when it came time to opening our next versions of Bowl and Barrel, which were in San Antonio and Houston, and we opened those simultaneously, we said, instead of feeding our neighbor, let's just be our neighbor. And let's open a concept that can be complementary to the experience at Bowl and Barrel. And so that's how that concept was born. We have two of those locations, one in Houston at City Center, right next to our Bowl and Barrel. And then we have one in San Antonio as well.
Right, you've been in Houston for a while now, right? Since about 2015, if I remember correctly.
2015 is when we opened, but I actually went to high school in Houston. So I'm very familiar with Houston. Working with the Pappas family for so long, I spent a lot of time in Houston, so I know the city very well, and I love that city. And it's been as good to us as we could have imagined. Houston's been great to us.
Well, so let me just ask you. I mean, you know, you've got, like I said, you've got the General Public in Bowl and Barrel in City Center, and then you've got a Rustic in Uptown Park and a Rustic downtown, like right next to the Convention Center, right in the heart of, right next to Toyota Center, right in the heart of everything. So that's what right. Have you kind of observed about these three different parts of Houston? Like how are your customers sort of different from one place to another?
Well, so you're really, you know, Houston's such a big city, and it's so sprawling that you're really dealing with multiple different trade areas. And the consumer profile is different at each. The one downtown is very event driven. And it might be events from the convention center, conventions coming in and renting the space out. It might be events from a concert or a concert at Toyota Center or at Minute Maid or a game at Toyota Center or Minute Maid. But it's very event driven. And then the nice thing about that space in particular is it's really designed for a live music experience. Location, our rustic in Uptown Park over by the Galleria, we approached it differently. We wanted it to be more of a neighborhood feel. So the music component, while it's still prominent, you see a big stage there. It's certainly pared down from the one downtown. We're not going to do the big blowout concerts at Uptown. It's going to be more, you know, where you have your business lunch and you have your happy hour after work and you go on date night or you take family for brunch on Saturdays or Sundays. And so it's much more of a neighborhood approach. And it's certainly worked out that way. You never know what you're going to get when you build something, but it's good to see the dip. They both feel like the rustic, don't get me wrong, but slightly different feel within and slightly different menu. We have much more robust steak program at the Uptown Park location by the Galleria, and the downtown location is much more casual dining.
And then tell me a little bit about kind of City Center. I think of that as maybe a little more family friendly, but I mean, it's such an interesting development because it's so dining focused. I mean, you've got the movie theater, but you've got, you know, sort of high profile national chain restaurants. You've got some locally owned one-offs. It's a kind of a real eclectic mix.
It is. And you know, most mixed use developments like that have the retail and the restaurant and the office and the apartment. A lot of them nowadays aren't very successful. They just don't do that. They're not programmed very well. But City Center, I feel like it was programmed very well. The center has been a massive success for the developers and then also for everybody that's doing business there. And you are correct. You do pull from the Memorial area. You pull from the Derry Ashford area. You have the Energy Corridor right there where we get a lot of corporate events from the Energy Corridor. So it's a uniquely positioned space. And when you look at it from the map, they called it City Center because they kind of said, you know, if you look at downtown Houston all the way out to Katy, down I-10, it's really in the dead center of all of that. And so, you know, you really have a wide trade area that you can pull from. And the center's been a success, and we're happy to be there. And certainly, we love when the energy markets are doing really well because we do really well there. And fortunately, we've been in a good run in Texas.
Yeah, so you know that certainly, Bowl and Barrel and the general public. I mean, they seem like they could be. I mean, obviously, you've replicated them in three cities, but it certainly seems like even within the Houston market, you could probably open a couple more.
Yeah, we are certainly looking. We love the concept, and we, like I said, we love the city, and it's such a big city that you can look at all the different trade areas where you go north and south. From downtown all the way up to, you know, the Woodlands or down to even Galveston all the way down way south, or going east to west. There's just it's such a sprawling city with a lot of opportunities. We certainly have identified a few that we've kind of circled as as hot spots for us. And the nice thing about Bowl and Barrel is because it's a uniquely small bowling alley. We want to keep it intimate. There's on average 15 lanes, as opposed to your big kind of sprawling mega center, 40, 50 lane bowling alleys. We want to keep it tight so we can go into some areas that maybe a big massive bowling complex couldn't go. So it gives us a little bit more flexibility on the real estate standpoint.
Right. I'm sure your friends at Midway who own City Center have pitched you on East River, right? I can only imagine.
Yeah. Well, I can neither confirm nor deny that at this time.
And then, as you mentioned, you have Mutt's Cantina, and then you have a Tex-Mex restaurant, Joe Leo. So, I mean, do you see Houston as a fit for either of those somewhere at some point in time?
So Mutt's certainly. Mutt's is a concept we're scaling quickly. We just opened our newest one in Austin 3 weeks ago now. And so we're up to four locations there. or with that concept. Joe Leo, which was a passion project for me. Joe Leo Romero was my grandfather. And he was the one that taught me to cook. He was a wonderful man and lived a great life. And so I wanted to do something that kind of paid homage to him. And so we opened that because obviously Texas doesn't have enough Tex-Mex restaurants. So we felt like, why not throw one more in the mix? Whether we bring that to Houston or not, I don't know. I think we're going to really push the Dallas Fort Worth market where it's currently located. And then we're really interested in Tex-Mex outside of Texas, to be honest. I had experience, obviously, like I mentioned, with Papacito's brand, and there is a real hunger for Tex-Mex outside of Texas. So whether we continue to grow that brand in Texas or not, I'm not sure, but certainly outside of the state.
Yeah, I mean, if you just think about what, you know, Fort Fry has done with Super Rica, kind of doing that in Atlanta.
Exactly.
And Nashville. I mean, I think you're right. And what's so strange, of course, is that, you know, any Texan who's tried Tex-Mex in other states will tell you is that it's never quite right. Like there's just something about, sure. There's just something about trying to do that in other cities where it doesn't, it just doesn't taste right. So
it's off.
Yeah.
It's like an alternate universe version of Tex-Mex for some reason. And yeah, I don't know why it always ends up that way. It seems like.
Yeah. And of course it's such a staple cuisine for Texans. If Texas barbecue can kind of conquer the world and be exported to places like California, then I can't imagine why Tex-Mex could do the same thing.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, and then not to mention just the fact that we're such a massive population in Texas that we do spread out too. You know, there are people that leave Texas and move to other cities. I'm sure that most of them do it begrudgingly because they'd rather be in Texas. But I can tell you, I have friends that whether they live in Chicago or LA or New York that are all originally from Texas that are like, man, we would kill for some good queso. just give me some good fajitas, something. And so there's a need for it. There certainly is. But, you know, it's also kind of, it is tough. And the Tex-Mex space, as you mentioned, barbecue is that way. It's a tough space to compete in. Unfortunately, we've done a good job here in Dallas with it, but it's tough because it's very personal. The things that, you know, everybody kind of has their favorite go-to spot. Where this place has the best chips and salsa, or this place has the best queso, or whatever it might be. Same with barbecue. I learned that lesson when I was running the Papado brand with the Pappas family. I asked them, I was like, why don't we do Papado in New Orleans? And they're like, we're not competing against Grandma's gumbo. No right. chance, you know? Right. And so we like to look for opportunities and low hanging fruit. And I see a lot of green space, for the Tex-Mex genre outside of Texas.
But you don't have any concepts outside of Texas currently, right? So this is a new avenue for you.
Well, so we are actually, under construction on the Rustic brand. We're outside of the state of Texas. Finally, we're going to Arizona, Denver, San Diego, Orlando, and Tampa. And then after that, we'll be looking at Georgia and the Carolinas. So that's kind of our growth plan, a little bit southeast, a little bit southwest, mostly below Mason-Dixon line, because we do like more temperate climates. Partially that's because I don't like to travel and be up and have to work in the cold. I lived in Chicago for 8 years, so I feel like I paid my dues.
So then essentially, I guess anywhere that you're committed to putting a Rustic could potentially also be a location of Joe Leo.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. Our model is really because the Rustic is so large and it takes so much manpower and so much of a big investment. We'll lead with that concept and then do our other concepts around it.
And then kind of on a more local note, I mean, you know, Uptown Park has seen so many changes over the last couple of years. You know, we've seen Urbe opening and mm-hmm. Tasting Room's about to give way to Lombardi, the Italian restaurant. I mean,
yep.
What's that been like from your perspective? I mean, how have those changes been received?
It's been great for us. We love the center. We love the visibility from the freeway. It wasn't a blast having all the construction on the freeway for a while, but it's been a great center for us. And we opened it in July of 2020, right in the height of COVID, which was certainly not our desired time, but you know, COVID hit and we all just kind of had to deal with it and do the best we can. So we opened in the heart of COVID and we opened very busy as much as we could be or we were allowed to be at that time. But that concept or that location, excuse me, has grown each month and it's doing really well for us. And we like the center and we like adding more quality tenants to the mix anywhere we go, because we do subscribe to the rising tides raises all ship theory. And so we're excited to have some better operators or some newer operators, I should say, not so much better, but newer operators coming in to really complement what we're doing.
Well, and I suppose if you had to open in 2020, you know, you could do worse than, there's a lot of social distancing when you have 20,000 square feet, right? Like it could have been worse.
That certainly has played to our favor over the last few years. There's no doubt about it. And the other thing that was interesting during that period, and I hate to even dwell on that period, but we did learn a lot, is when I would go out as a consumer dining during that period where it was, 50% capacity and people had these weird shower curtains in between tables, and the dining experience was just not good. There was no energy in the space. It was just awkward. It was not worth going out at that time, in my opinion, as a consumer. But the Rustic was an interesting space because it is so big. And you did have live music that even at 50% capacity, with live music and having a couple hundred people in there because of the space, lends itself to be that large or to allow that kind of capacity. There was energy and it was still fun. And it felt like there was a reason to get out of the house. And so that was something that benefited us as a brand during that period. And I think it stayed with us.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a ton of sense. And I'm with you, right? Like that's, 3 years ago and the environment is so different now, but I guess from my perspective, I'm just glad we got through it and people are growing again and feeling optimistic about the future. I think that's the most important thing.
No doubt. And it helps to be in Texas. I will say that we live in a great state and we're obviously optimistic as a general rule. I remember when I lived in Chicago during the 2008 financial crisis, even though I lived in Chicago, Pappas headquarters were in Houston. So I was back in Texas pretty much every other week. And I just noticed a difference coming in my own demeanor where I would come to Texas and everybody was smiling and the sun was shining and the birds were chirping and everybody was hopeful and optimistic about the future. And then you'd go back to Chicago and it was just dark and doom and gloom. And that's really, it was during that period that I decided I wanted to move back to Texas because I just love the optimism of the state and the positivity and we're growing. And I just love being a part of it. But I'll tell you, Texas is becoming, as you know, because you're in the, you both follow restaurants very, very closely. Dallas and Houston both have a new restaurant opening every 5 minutes. So it's becoming much more competitive, much harder to find good workforce. The real estate component becomes more challenging, but it also makes it more fun to, as a consumer, to have great options to go out to.
Yeah. I mean, how often do you get down to Houston these days?
I'm probably every 3 weeks down there, I mean, it's a 45-minute flight. It's easy.
Right. Right. Have you been anything recently that really impressed you that you were really excited about?
Where I keep going back to, I think Nancy Sossel does such a great job over there. I know it's not new, but because it's close to the downtown Rustic location, I love popping over there. I certainly, you know, obviously I'm a homer, so I usually hit up Pappas Brothers Steakhouse. Again, I know it's not new, but as I get older, I am much less interested in trying new and much more interested in trying reliable.
I mean, certainly there is no more reliable steakhouse than Pappas Brothers, right? The dry aged program, the incredible wine list,
sure,
the service. I mean, yeah, they do it right. They've done it right for a long time. Have you been to Littles, their new spot, the seafood spot?
Not yet. No, I haven't been yet, but I do plan on going. Have you?
Several times. Yeah, I'm really impressed by it. I think they.
Okay, good.
I think it's a special place.
Yeah. No, you know, Eric, it's we all are busy, number one, and number two, we work hard for our money, and going out to restaurant, I want to go out. And if I'm going to make that decision to go out, I want to make sure I know I'm going to get a good meal. And I generally have a theory that I don't want to go to there was a period in my life where every new restaurant that opened up in a city that we were in, I was there within the first, you know, 30 days just to try it out, check out the competition, what's going on. I've taken a completely different approach now. I don't want to go to a place unless it's been around for at least a year. One, to let the kinks get worked out. And then two, just to give it a year to see what people really think about it.
You know, that's so funny, because obviously my living, I'm not at the new place in the first 30 days. I'm there in the first 5 days sometimes, you know.
Right.
Exactly. As early as I can. And I tend to, you know, I'll go a couple of times in that first month, and then, you know, maybe not again for a year. So I'm forming sort of quick impressions and then moving on. It's just, it's the nature of it's the nature of the business. But I like that idea of kind of letting things settle down a little bit.
Yeah. If I'm traveling to a new city, I make sure to go to the institutions first. I don't want to go to the new hotspot. I want to go to the place that's been around for 30 years and is still cranking. Because if they've been able to do it for that long, then they're doing something right. And I want to be a part of that. So just that's just kind of been my theory. And internally, we talk a lot about that, is instead of being the cool new thing and the cutesy new thing and try this new menu item. And there's this thing that's good. Everybody, this trend that's going on in the dining space where everybody's putting something on a something, and, you know, oh, we got to do it too. We've kind of taken the other approach that let's just focus on doing what we do very well and hone in on that so that we can be reliable to our consumer. And when they come in, they order a steak or a burger or whatever it might be, and they can count on it being that way every time.
Absolutely. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, you don't build a venue that's as big as the Rustic and think like, oh, you know, we may have to close this down in 5 years or reconcept it. I mean, you're in there for the long term.
We are. We better be.
I mean, you know, how old is that? The Papacitos in Sugarland, right? Like, it's probably been there, you know, the Papado, they've probably been there for close to 30 years at this point. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, some of the original Papados and Papacitos, the original Papacitos, might be at 40 years now.
Right. Right.
So, you know, that's a testament to just consistent operation.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Kyle, I do have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you would like to discuss?
I want to ask you something when I get back to Houston next. I do want to mention a little shameless plug, but we are opening the Rustic in Houston Hobby Airport early part of next year, which we're very excited about.
Oh, that'll be fun. You can still create the live music, I guess.
We will. Well, it'll be a more pared down version, you know, one or two piece acts, but create some energy, fun, and having experience in the airports. It's a unique business model. It is always nighttime at an airport. The people are drinking at 6 a.m. and it's a unique model, but it's a lot of fun to be there. And we're excited that Houston will be our first airport to open in for that brand. And we're excited to be a part of it. But getting back to what I was going to ask you, my question, when I come down in 2 weeks, I'll be down 2 weeks. Where should I go?
Well, I was just thinking about that because you mentioned that you kind of like to be in that East End, kind of close to the Rustic. I will say Agricole Hospitality, they had Miss Carousel right there, right down the street from you guys. And they, they just flipped that concept to Lightning's Good Time. So, and it's got a live music component, obviously on a much smaller scale. So I'd pop in there for a drink and kind of see what those guys are up to, because it's always interesting. And then, you know, Street to Kitchen just moved from its original location to a larger, bigger location. And if you like Thai food, that'll make you sweat, yes, and maybe even cry a little bit.
Now we're talking.
The new Street to Kitchen's a really grand space, and I'm so excited for their owners and their whole team. I think that's got to be number one for you.
I love that. And you're speaking my language, spicy Thai food.
All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Kyle Noonan, what is your favorite cocktail at the Rustic?
Our margarita, hands down.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Boys to Men at Astroworld, or the Astrodome.
What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
Popeyes, red beans, and rice.
That's a great answer. All right, who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Hakeem.
And then finally, when you're ordering a pizza, what are your go-to toppings?
Pepperoni. I'm easy.
Kyle, give us the website and the social media for as many of your restaurants as you want to plug.
Sure. Well, just the website is freerangeconcepts.com, and that'll link you to all our different brands. And then you can follow me on social media, Kyle Noonan.
All right. Kyle, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Always a pleasure. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.